Virologist, recombination specialist. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule and joining us here on KBOO Radio.
Okay, well, thank you, Teresa.
I really appreciate it.
Be back. Okay, take care.
You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO 90.7 FM in Cascadia and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Per Fogering with Fight the Empire.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet on Tuesday, February 25th at 6 p.m.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fogering, and this is your radio station, KBOO. An interesting report came out recently. It's basically it was a kind of a study done by a group called the Circle Economy Think Tank, and this is a report that they made for the World Economic Forum at Davos, Switzerland. And the upshot of the report is that the world is using up too much stuff. And by stuff, they mean materials. And it's very interesting what they include. But the use of materials has quadrupled since 1970. That's only, that's 50 years ago. Has gone up four times. And population has only doubled. So basically, people are kind of doubling up on what they consume. And so you might ask, well, what is this stuff? Well, 50% of it is sand, gravel, clay, and cement for building materials, plus minerals that are used in making fertilizer. That's 50% of all the stuff that we use. 15% is coal, oil, and gas. 10% is metal ores. And 25% is plants and trees that are used for food and fuel. And so I say, well, that is how it breaks down. Well, where does it go? 30% of all the stuff we use, it stays in use after a year or so, and that includes buildings and vehicles. 15% goes into the atmosphere. 25% is just dumped into the environment. That would be like all the plastic that clogs up our waterways and oceans. 33% goes into landfills and those big slag heaps outside of mines, and only 8.6% is recycled, and that is down from 9%. So when you think about that, only 8.5% is recycled of all the stuff we use. That means almost all of it is virgin materials used for the first time and then just kind of discarded. And so it's very clear that this cannot go on forever, and maybe can't even go on a few more years. The average per person for all the stuff we consume is is 13 tons a year. So just imagine that. The average person consumes 13 tons a year of all the materials that are used in the world. When you think about that, that is the average person in the world. People in rich countries like the United States and Europe, they consume even more. And people consume much less in the poor countries. So in a sense, the rich people of the world are destroying the world, and the poor folks of the world are paying more than their share in just kind of all the troubles and the dislocations that this consumption takes. When you look at our economy, which is based on perpetual growth, and what would happen if it collapsed, if it stopped? The economy probably would collapse because it is based on, for example, here's some examples of this kind of weird growth that we are in. A lot of people buy their clothing through mail order outfits like Land's End, and so you get a package with your clothing in it, you try it on, you pick out what fits and what doesn't fit, and you return what you're not going to buy. I'd always thought that, well, the companies, they kind of make sure that the clothing is still in good order and they put it back on sale again. Not at all. Apparently, a lot of the mail order, when you send back, if you order, say, a few pairs of jeans and you send some back, those jeans just get thrown into a landfill. They just get dumped. Another example would be appliances. You know, the goods, a lot of these appliances are made to break down. Apparently, it's like 10-year refrigerators. They're only meant to last for 10 years, and then you got to buy another one. Well, what do you do with the old one? Can they be recycled? Maybe some of it can, but maybe not. It didn't used to be that way. My family has a washing machine that's, I think it's getting close to about 40 years old. Maybe on its last legs, but it is still in use. And so the economy is just made to break down and create junk that gets discarded. And when you had to think that everything, since the supply is limited, everything we consume means less for our children. That's except for plants and trees. I mean, they can be renewed. So, but we don't think about it that way. I think in a lot of ways, Americans are still living in the past. You know, you think about when the Europeans first came to this continent, to them, this continent seemed endless, an endless supply of good land, water, minerals, everything, oil, cheap oil eventually, and it seemed like it would never run out. Well, now we know better, and we know that things do run out, but we are still living as if they don't, as if there will always be more. People want to call in with a comment on this. The number to call is 503-231-8187. One person who realized that perhaps the supply was not as endless as people think was George Kennan. George Kennan was one of the great gurus of U.S. foreign policy in the years after World War II. He was known as the father of containment. So he was kind of a hero to a lot of liberals because back in those days, there were a lot of, the Cold War was just beginning. It was in high gear. And there were a lot of conservatives, a lot of Republicans, not just Republicans, just conservatives generally, who they wanted to roll back the Soviet Union. And Cannon took the opposite tack, that he thinks that the Soviet Union should be contained, because he thought of it as an expansionist power that had to be stopped from expanding. But he wrote a foreign policy statement for a president at that time, which is Harry Truman. And he talked about, this is what George Kennan said in his presidential policy statement number 23 back in 1948. He said, the U.S. has 50% of the world's wealth, but only 6.3% of its population. Our real task is to devise a foreign policy that permits us to maintain this position of disparity. And he said, we have to dispense with all sentimentality and daydreaming and be realistic. So in other words, he's saying we're getting a bigger share of the world's resources, and the aim of U.S. foreign policy is to keep it that way. But we have a caller on the line. Bart, good morning.
Good morning, Pear. Thanks for your work, always. Small discrepancy or disagreement, if something goes back to a mail order house or whatever, they're not dumping it in the landfill. They're getting rid of it on the secondary market. It may go to a third world country. It may go to the surplus stores that are around where they're selling returns from, you know, Target and all the other locals. I mean, it's. I think that your point is well taken, and that people should think about this. But I don't think that it's, you know, instantly down the tube.
Well, I hope that's true, you know, because it kind of offends my frugal state of mind to think of people, the stuff just getting thrown away. My guess is that maybe both things happen, that some of it gets reused, some of it gets, and some gets thrown away. This is just something that I read, you know.
Sure. Well, I'm also pretty cheap and frugal, and so I like to think that things get used. And I'll just leave it there and listen to the rest of your stuff. Good day.
Okay, thank you. Well, you have to wonder what kind of an economy we live in. You know, we live in this, we just talked about George Kennan, who in some ways he was considered a liberal, but he believed that, we're getting more than our fair share, and let's keep it that way. As I was said in the beginning of this, this report was done by the Circle Economy Think Tank. And exactly what is a circular economy? Well, it's called, it's one in which everything kind of gets reused. It gets repaired, reused, refurbished, or recycled. And so basically, as much as possible, you have a closed loop system. And where that minimizes the use of resource outputs and the creation of waste and pollution. So that's what a circular economy is. What it's done, it kind of replaces what we've had linear economies for ages. And there the line, it just sort of, it's you take something out of the ground, you use it for a bit, and then you dump it. So it's like... it's almost like the world's economy is a process for taking nature's resources and turning it into garbage. When you think about it, when you think of the world as a system, the only real input is the sun's energy. That's all. Everything else is what's on planet Earth. It stays on planet Earth, and it's but the sun's energy comes that is the only input, and it gave us all the plants that grow and that we consume. And then those plants, some of those plants over the ages, they very slowly turned into oil, into petroleum. It's sort of been said that oil is really kind of what's left of the ancient dinosaurs, but it's not quite true. It's more like it's what's left after compressed, just kind of little fibers and plant life that would cover the earth, and it slowly got compressed and heated up and processed by nature and turned into petroleum. But when you think about it, that petroleum, the oil that we consume, took millions of years for it to be formed by nature. Millions of years. But we've used about half of it in a little over 200 years, and the other half really can't be used because we reached this this climate tipping point. And so basically the oil that's in the ground that took millions of years to form is no longer usable without all sorts of drastic consequences. But people don't want to believe that. You know, they still talk about finding new oil discoveries, you know, the oil that we use now. Well, look at it this way. It was easy to get at one time. In 1859, the first commercial oil well was drilled in Pennsylvania, and they struck oil at 69 feet. So you drill down, you dig down 69 feet, out comes oil. Later on, you had these gushers in Texas and Oklahoma, where oil under tremendous geological pressure would just shoot up into the sky, you know. And, well, that was the easy oil. That oil is basically gone. What we have now is oil that's drilled from miles under the ocean, or fracked and using all sorts of toxic methods. That's the oil we use now, and it's more expensive. But we have another caller on the line. Dave is on the line. Good morning, Dave.
Yes, I just wanted to make a real quick comment to mm-hmm. kind of bring some folks into reality. And I'm an older guy, been a follower of you folks for the last 40 years or so. And I've been a real intense recycler and stuff. But a real simple thing for anybody to do would be to just go to one of our recycle garbage centers and spend about an hour there and just watch what's wasted, what's thrown away, what's reusable and stuff. It's just mind-boggling.
Got any examples?
It's a quagmire of anything you can think of when you go there and you start looking into it, you know, the metal products, the plastic, the paper products and stuff. I mean, if it was up to me, they'd be putting a 5-cent fee on all McDonald's wrappers, because you look along the roads and stuff, and that's all you see is fast food crap.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But really, just I would challenge anybody just spend an hour at one of the metro recycle centers and just take a peek, and it's just a whole other vision of what we're throwing away.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll leave it at that. And it's just a simple thing, but it makes real good sense to watch, see it.
Well, thanks for bringing that up. I think this is something that people should be aware of. Maybe I wonder if they have. If their school kids go on tours of these recycling centers, be very instructive. But we do have another caller. Art is on the line. Morning, Art.
Hi there, Pam.
Hello. Are you there?
Am I coming across okay?
Good morning.
You can hear me?
I think we lost
anyway,
our caller.
I guess you did. I'm still on.
Yeah, I can't.
You can't hear me.
Hmm.
Well, I wanted to talk about...
this is very
recycling.
Interesting. I cannot hear Art.
Yeah, I guess I'm talking across.
Oh, now we did.
I wanted to talk about recycling as a part of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small part to really understand what we need to do to reduce our oil consumption. Reusing and recycling, yes, of course, should be topping the list of reducing waste and offensively. But transportation is the one that I always get into and say, we fly too much, we drive too much,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we truck and ship goods around, and we play with our toy engines too much.
Mm-hmm.
And your point about oil being running out, you know, there again, it's a larger question of how we waste. Let's waste our time. Let's have fun wasting our time. So there's that. And so recycling goes way beyond that. Really, they go after the oil companies who sell us lousy buses, for instance. But you can't take a standard bus, put an electric motor in it, and call it good. But they're going to do it. Oh, boy.
Hmm.
They know it's not true. And they know that the Barber Boulevard light rail plan is not a good one. It's horribly damaging to the environment. First of all, by taking out at least 500 trees, mature ones.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that. Yeah. And it's not good. It doesn't terminus well at Tualatin, really. Well, it's a pretty picture that they got, but doesn't go through Tigard very well either.
You go online, you can sort of follow the route as though it goes the way it goes. It winds up at the Bridgeport shopping mall.
But oh boy!
It takes some weird turns and everything to get there.
Yeah, trust me, it's particularly bad engineering that should go to court if it's not brought to a halt within a few months.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is on its way out, but don't let it go on, because there's casually we're going to get voters to approve $500 million for our cash cow, and we'll build parking garages and cut trees down and put in probably low-income housing, nothing high at all, I think, because it won't be good for the pedestrian environment as they're proposing. It makes it worse. Anyway, I steered the conversation into other things, but so I'll let you go. All right.
Dave, thanks for the call. I don't know. He's describing a kind of economy that is really headed for some kind of collapse, or maybe a quick collapse, or maybe just a slow disintegration. But it's something that really cannot go on for very long. We have another call on the line. Joe is on the line. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. I really appreciate what you are having to say, and especially your invocation of this term I've not heard before, circular economics, but it's certainly a concept I'm familiar with because I work in a library, and that, I think, is a very common example of what circular economics can look like.
That's right, yes.
Institutionally.
Mm-hmm. I worked at the library, too, for 5 years. One of the nicest jobs I ever had.
Yeah, one thing, though, that I would like to point out for the sake of people being involved in their own library and supporting this concept of circular economics is even libraries throw away inconscionable amounts of materials because they get dirty or in slight disrepair, and they don't fund people to repair them except if they're like highly valuable or irreplaceable. They, you know, bank on the economics of disposable publishing that, you know, is going to sell them another cheap book for less money than it'll cost to fix it.
Hmm.
And that's something that we have to like talk about with our libraries.
Right.
It's not just this one, it's a lot of them.
Well, I think glad you brought that up. Do these books, they get recycled, the paper get trashed?
They will be recycled, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're books where the actual value of the material being the printed whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, still largely there and is recoverable, but they've decided it's not worth the effort or really the labor budget to recover them.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Well, thanks for that information. We do have another caller on the line. I think Mike is on the line. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning. Hey, thanks, Bear. I'm reading a book about libraries, and it says libraries are built around stories, and stories change over time, so it's always a pain in the ass for the librarian. And so, anyway, that starts the information off, but a couple things that we've done in the past is, one time with an art instructor, we built a kiln out of recycled magazines, you know, that hard shellacked paper that's full of, you know, lots of toxic materials and stuff like that.
Hmm.
It's really hard to get rid of, and it's really hard to vaporize or whatever, but we built this kiln out of your sand and gravel, of course, but a kind of a slurry over just a wire dome, and it worked out really good. We were firing stuff that afternoon.
That's
and so I think there's lots of I was with you in Portland Peak Oil for a while, and And during that time, we kind of came out with a philosophy that if people take on all the problems of the world, it's like too big of a task, like the seas and everything. And so what they need to do is look at themselves, and every year they just lessen their consumption. And I think that's really a good place for people to start with, is just lessen your consumption.
It's a good idea. Well, it's sort of, there's a voluntary simplicity, and I guess there's involuntary simplicity.
But every year. Do it every year.
Right. Okay.
So love you. That's it. And recycle your plastic, recycle everything. Figure out.
Whoops.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for that call. Gee whiz, that brings to mind, I took an art class years ago, and part of it involved folding paper. And just take a sheet of paper, and you fold it enough times in the right way, and it gives immense strength to it. You know, you have layers and layers that are doubled over on themselves. And actually, the one class, they took a sheet of paper, and they folded it into this kind of thing that would support the end of a couch or something like that. So that shows you what you can do on a wise use of resources. But, we're getting near the end of the hour, but we should think about what kind of economy we have that just uses up so much stuff and then discards it, which just adds to, it messes up the environment. The great example is all the plastics that are not only clogging up the environment, the plastics are, they cannot be recycled. They can be burned, and then you have gases get into the atmosphere. But plastic just kind of degrade and get chopped up into smaller and smaller bits and pieces. So you basically get plastic dust that is everywhere. It's in the water we drink, the air we breathe, into our lungs, into our bodies. And so in some ways, when it comes to plastics, you and me, our human bodies are kind of like a plastic waste dump for all the bad stuff that causes. Well, we obviously need some kind of a different economy, and I think people maybe look up circular economy, do a little research, and see what kind of what economy that would be. It would be a lot different from what we have now, which is sort of a use it and dump it economy. So, having said that, I was wondering, I don't know, we didn't get any calls about it, but apparently there was a big debate last night among the Democratic candidates for president, and from what I hear, Bernie Sanders came out pretty well. Elizabeth Warren did pretty well. The billionaire, what's his name, Bloomberg, did not do well, which I think that's a good thing. Why should somebody be able to buy their way onto a candidate's debate just because they have a lot of money? A lot of money and not very much in the way of new ideas. So having said that, I will say farewell for today. This has been Fight the Empire, and stay tuned to KBOO. It's your radio station.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:59. Coming up next on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein looks into establishment media's continuing efforts to take down Bernie Sanders. And at 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman interviews writer, poet, critic, and singer Garth Greenwell.
Hello, I'm Bob Madar. Join me for episode 5 of the third season of Local Folks Podcast and meet Rick, the manager of Project Action at the Corvallis Daytime Drop-In Center. Rick was formerly homeless and now devotes his time to helping local folks who are homeless change their lives and find employment and housing. You can find local folks at KBOO.FM. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folk.
From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, we examine the establishment media's multiple attempts to take down Bernie Sanders. Also, Japanese Americans commemorate the 78th anniversary of the executive order to round up Japanese Americans and put them in prison camps. All this coming up straight at you. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I invite you to stay tuned. Coming up later on in the broadcast, we're going to get into the way in which the media, NPR, and all of them are in the takedown Bernie mode. There's a lot to talk about that right before the debate. But first, we want to share with you this interview we did with Satsuki Ina, with Tsutsuru for Solidarity. These are the Japanese Americans who are commemorating the 78th anniversary of the executive order to round up Japanese Americans and put them in prison camps. They are now fighting these prison camps for Central Americans. But listen to this.
My name is Satsuki Ina. I was born in the Tule Lake Segregation Center, a maximum security prison for Japanese Americans incarcerated during World War II. I am currently one of the co-organizers of a grassroots nonviolent direct action group of